I'm not really prepared for what's going to come out of my mouth because it's past 4:30 and it gets real. Anytime we put on the headphones past 4:30, I feel like there's tons of apologies.
Yeah.
Are going to be made.
It's like the filter has completely done its job for the day. And it's like, listen, I retire at 4 o'clock. Yeah. So if you are going to speak the words out of your mouth, you just get what you get.
Get what you get.
That's it.
And we are creatures of habit and we thrive under consistency, but then sometimes we throw a wrench in it and I'm like, oh my gosh. And you know what wrench I've really realized that we've thrown into stuff? So on Mondays we record. That's a recording day. Mm-hmm. Keep up with our Instagram. I usually post a little thing. So we look a ratchet mess on Mondays. Yes. And that's like being nice.
9 out of 10 times. I mean, but we come from working out. Like we get up at 6.
Yeah.
We do all the parent things, get the kids ready to go. We have to get them ready, feed them, do the lunches, empty the dishwasher, make sure the house is in, like, not order, but, like, it works to function when you get home mm-hmm. from all the craziness.
And so, then we have to eat.
And then we have to eat. And usually that's in the car on the way to an 8 a.m. workout, which we are ski skirting in at, like, 7:59, because traffic getting from school drop-off to where we have to work out. I'm sorry, where we get to work out. Let me rephrase that. And then the turnaround time of getting back here to record, it's a lot. So, like, from 6 to 10 on a Monday, 4 hours, just to get us to the recording point, there's a lot of life that happens
it is.
In between. But we're focused,
so proud of
and
it.
We're ready for it.
Like, but we look like we crawled out of a garbage can. Right. And sometimes we smell like we crawled out of a garbage can. And this is what, we invite people into the closet, and we look a ratchet mess. And then this is not lost to me because we recorded today with Garrett, mm-hmm. and you're going to hear him in a few minutes. We both look nice today.
Oh, you're right.
And it's on Zencaster, and it is, he's remote.
So true.
He can't see us.
He can't see us.
And then it occurred to me, every remote one we've done, we have looked nice.
You're so right.
The Edgy Veg.
Mm-hmm.
The Bravery Mag.
Toledo.
Now Garrett and Toledo. Yeah. We all had makeup on. There are those. I'm like,
what are we doing wrong here?
Why are we so effing backwards in this approach? I mean, I'm sorry
to all of the guests,
local people, because I realize what we look like, and it mm-hmm. is, you know, and I know you don't care.
Yeah. But yeah. People don't tune into the show to see what we look like. They tune in to, I guess, hear what we have to say. Sometimes I question. But we're thankful you do.
We are so thankful.
So thankful.
We love our Zen community. So if you're here for the first time, welcome.
Welcome.
We don't look like a ratchet mess.
No.
But if you're here and you're old and we love you, thank you for coming back and just in picturing us looking a ratchet mess.
Right.
But it is 4:30 on a Tuesday, and it's kind of a offset. Our series through the month is childhood wellness, and we're so excited about this. It's going really well.
I love it. I mean, we've had guests on that have talked about sleep habits and how to create good sleep patterns and habits for your children. We've had guests come on and talk about math trauma and how to avoid it in your house and in your life. We had a guest on about cyberbullying, which was so enlightening, and I am so thankful that we have such an amazing resource in this community, but also something that she is able to share nationwide and globally, really, because if you're connected to the interwebs.
Interwebs.
You can find her.
That WW.
That WWW. It sure does make you smart.
I agree with you. When we first set out to do this, I was like, okay, it's kind of cool. But the resources that you can, even if you're not local, you can tap into some of these, especially with the book, mm-hmm. Don't Go to Sleep.
Don't Go to Sleep.
Which is one of our new favorites.
Same. Everybody in my house really loves this book.
Not the boys so much, really. But it's more Luna.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care who likes it.
Right.
As long as you get 1 out of 3, I feel like that's a success. It's just like dinners in my house. You get one, I'm like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was amazing. With the math trauma, Stephanie White with
Louisville Family Fun.
I thought that she was amazing in explaining and opening my eyes to how I speak about even certain subjects. It doesn't have to be math, but mm-hmm. how I have verbiage around certain things and how to change up my way of looking at it.
Absolutely.
So groundbreaking. And then the cyberbullying, I can't speak enough.
I know.
If you haven't had a chance to go back and listen to that or listen to it again.
Yes.
So I think that's just an amazing one.
Yeah, that's definitely one of my personal favorites that we have, you know, been so lucky to have her. And that's episode 51, if you haven't listened to it yet, but it's a good one. And we are going to be talking with a dear friend of mine who is a sports psychologist, and she's going to be sharing some thoughts on sports, youth sports, competitive sports, psychology behind it. There are some sports psychologists out there that, you know, have different opinions about what youth sports does, and she's going to be sharing hers. And I think it's going to be a great conversation that is probably going to make a lot of people internally who are have kids involved in youth sports kind of open their eyes and maybe just look at things a little differently. So she's going to be on in the next couple weeks. And then we have an awesome nutritionist. Yeah. Who is going to be talking about language that we can create around eating habits and the way that we can kind of create a better, healthier picture for what eating looks like in our families.
Yeah. So, and that really hits home for you.
It does.
It's one of those that you've really, when we set out to do this, number one, that was your number one. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to be able to format language around
sure,
just healthy habits and make sure that you're doing the best you can.
Right. Which and I think a lot of us all, like, we have good intentions, and I think the path is always paved with good intentions, but it's just making sure that when you say something, how does your child hear you say it? And tone is one thing. Facial expressions is another. The words you use. I mean, there are some words that
I think I struggle at all of those.
Yeah. So that I think I'm saying it one way, but my kids are hearing it in another way. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, oh gosh, am I creating, you know, something? Am I creating something around this word? I don't know. Like, and that's just where I feel so lucky in this day and age that we can literally just search and say, like, oh, okay, wait, I have a question about this. And it's not just this is what worked for my family, you know, down the road that you used to just be able to ask a neighbor or a family friend. But now we actually have at our fingertips help and resources that have been through this firsthand and are able to help create an open conversation that maybe once before we weren't able to have. So really looking forward to the next couple weeks of this series.
I am too.
And I'm really excited to share the guest that we have on today, Garrett Wilhelm. And he is with Common Ground Foundation, which is a really amazing school in the Reston, Virginia area. And he also has a podcast called What's Best for Kids. And he has so much knowledge in the education world when it comes to formatting education for children. He's really been very instrumental in just creating a new light on how we look at education. And he...
Very knowledgeable.
Very, very knowledgeable. I mean, he spent the past 20 years doing a lot of research, but being also a teacher and just seeing where the holes in the systems are. And, like, you know, he comes from it from a kid-first perspective, which I really love. It's not about meeting a budget, you know, in a school system. Mm-hmm. It's about what's best for kids.
And what I heard a lot from this podcast, too, and I meant to mention this, but he's basically saying you got to cut a lot of the fat.
Mm-hmm.
Cut the fat out. And once you do that, take all of that away. If you get down to it, can you put the kids first?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where people are really reluctant. Because when systems are in place, it's so hard to take them away.
It is.
Because you become vulnerable, and it gets, like, anxiety, and people don't want to change.
Yeah.
People do not. They're very hesitant.
It is. And I think a lot of people might hear in this conversation is, what are the changes you can make at home to help propel your child in the classroom? Mm-hmm. And it's not about a flashcard. It's not about, I mean, yes, those things are important.
Those are great.
Engaging, you know, mm-hmm. with your children is one thing. But, you know, I think even Stephanie White said it too. She's like, you're not just learning from a worksheet. Like, you've got to understand past
paper pushers.
Mm-hmm. Yes. You've got to understand how a problem works, not just why the answer is what it is, but how did you get there? And it doesn't always have to be the same way that, you know, there's so many different ways that you can get to an answer, but do you understand how you created the answer? And Garrett talks about that and talks with us about that in this podcast too. So I'm really looking forward to...
I want to hear people's responses too. And there's two key things when listening to these podcasts through our whole series. Number one, to keep in mind that these are just opinions.
Mm-hmm.
So we are opening up a dialogue. So take what you need. And then leave what doesn't. You can apply these to your life, and maybe it works for like a month. Maybe it doesn't work at all. And then another thing, if you feel triggered during any of these, I'm like, ooh, like you feel I don't like this, or maybe look inside, because there's been times I've heard some stuff and I'm like, oh, that's triggering for me.
Yeah.
And then it makes me look inward. I can maybe do better.
Sure.
Because our podcast is not meant to come out and say, you're doing all of this wrong. It's meant to open up conversations just to say, maybe this might work.
Sure.
You can apply this. We're not saying apply everything and just uproot your house.
Right.
But yeah, just opening up just information.
Absolutely. And we've been talking a lot about when judgment comes up, can you look at something with the opposite of judgment? Can you look at it with curiosity? Mm-hmm. Instead of judging, well, that's a dumb way to approach education. Ask yourself, why is that something that would work? What can I do in play to see myself making that change? And if it doesn't resonate with you right away, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't have to. But, I mean, it's definitely, we love giving people a space and a safe space to contribute to what we've asked them to contribute to. So sharing their opinions and sharing just what they're passionate about. And I love that we have a very receptive community that allows them to have that safe space to do.
I resonate with a lot of what Garrett said.
Yeah.
I felt that this was, especially if coming off of the media stuff with the colleges and that's a whole other thing.
Oh, gosh, I know.
But it does make you want to start scraping the ground and just stirring all of this up, and where can you start over and look at systems that are in place and making them better.
Absolutely.
Because obviously something's not working.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a lot not working.
Yeah.
But what does work is Garrett.
Yes. So we hope you enjoy Garrett's podcast.
There you go.
Hey Zen friends, welcome to Crazy Zen Life. I'm your host, Brittany Swan.
And I'm your host, Shannon Kessler. Join us as we navigate life on and off our yoga mat.
This is a podcast about mom life, boss life, and body life.
Real conversations about self-discovery and the journey of becoming more mindful in this crazy Zen life.
Hey Garrett, thanks for joining us today.
What's going on, guys? How's everybody doing?
We are doing great here in Louisville. How's it going in the VA today?
It's actually a super nice day, and I am kind of remote, sitting in a hotel lobby next to a Panera, stealing their internet.
Oh, nice. Oh, yeah.
Steal internet at any point in the given day. I feel like you're winning.
Right. And
that's what I'm saying.
Right. Panera just gives you those free smells to go along with that wonderful internet.
Yeah, because I'm gluten-free, I can't eat anything that I'm smelling. So it's really, I'm sitting in a place of gratitude at this point.
Wonderful.
All right, Garrett, well, we're so happy to have you on with us today. So can you walk us through what you're doing at Common Ground Foundation?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, to kind of give you a little bit of my origin story, I'm Garrett, and I am the executive director of Common Ground Foundation. We are a foundation in Reston, Virginia, kind of in the DC area, which Shannon has spent some time in. And we are a nonprofit company dedicated to providing a whole child personalized care and education to a culturally and socioeconomically diverse group of children. And we empower a community of parents to give back by volunteering their time to initiatives designed to improve and support the public. So that's like our mission statement. And if you can't tell that I have that memorized, I pretty much do.
Wow, that is one heck of an elevator speech. I really like it.
30 seconds. Thank you.
That's so funny. You're like, wrap it up, guys. Can we get the cliff notes on this? Or... That's really funny. So yeah, my career has been dedicated to changing the way education looks and feels for students, and to make it a very personal experience for kids, because I really feel like education in general has deviated away from, you know, really being focused around the child, and much more being focused on the overall success of the school and the quantification of success based upon, you know, test taking to get funding. I really feel like our model has been failing students for a very long time. And by definition, institutions take many, 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 many years to change. I think folks like me, as well as a lot of folks out there, have really gotten tired of it and decided to do something about it ourselves.
Yeah. Can you kind of give us a little bit of background or the history of how education formats were, I guess, instituted in the United States?
Sure. So, you know, great question. And, you know, our education system is based upon, it was really crafted in the early 1920s, and it was based upon preparing children for what jobs were available at that time, which were a lot of factory jobs. It was the big industrial revolution, and we were trying to send our children off well-prepared into a factory environment. And at that time, we're sending kids off to work at like 14, 15 years old. So the school system looked totally different. But if you think about it, it's the reason why, you know, children sit in rows, they raise their hand to talk, they need permission to go to the bathroom, all of these different things, because that served them well in factories. You know, being manageable was much more important than providing an education that truly set them up. And at that time, to be honest, it did set them up for their future. Most people left school and then entered trade work. And then as kind of we evolved through education, we started introducing technology. And technology really redefined the way that people learn, the access to information. Yet all as much forward movement in education that we've seen, we have not seen a reform in the education system. So, you know, technology is moving forward, but education is actually preparing us for the past. And so I've really taken the past 20 years of my career in education, first as a teacher, and then now as an administrator and school founder and all kinds of fun stuff, and really focused in on, well, what would an education look like that would prepare kids for a future that most of us don't really even know what will look like, right? Like technology in itself and the world in itself evolves at a pace now and iterates at a pace now that's far faster than we've ever seen before. And so we start thinking about, you know, we're sending kids into school where rote knowledge is the focus, is, you know, giving kids or teachers giving kids just information that they need to memorize and regurgitate. And at the end of the day, most of the things, it's sad to say, most of the things that kids learn in school have zero application in their future lives. And even us, you know, our generation is, and now I know that, you know, you two are much younger than me, way younger than me, like 23 or 24, I think. But I don't want to put an age on you, but I know it's much younger than me at 38. But no, you know, as we were growing up, our education, we kind of just did what we were supposed to do. But at the end of the day, like nothing really I learned in high school prepared me for being a drummer in a band and then eventually as a teacher and educator and school founder. Like really, truly nothing other than those teachers that really inspired me to continue learning. Like the teachers that engaged me and made education fun. But it's not the content that inspired me. It was the teachers that inspired me. Does that make sense? It was the personal relationship that inspired me to do what I do now. And it's sad. You know, we should be sending kids to school so that they can have this intrinsic fire that's within them to learn, stoked, not stifled. And I think we do a great job in the American public school system of stifling wonderful minds by quantifying math, science, and language as intelligence, where we're leaving out art and music and creativity and soft skills like compassion, grit, emotional intelligence in general. And so, yeah, that's kind of what, you know, in the history of education, you know, we've kind of seen very little change since the 1920s. And so I hope that because of folks like me and many folks like me across the world, that we'll start to see some iteration and change in education to truly prepare kids for what I believe is going to be a crazy future.
Why do you feel there's such a lack of change given the information age and progressive thought that we are now in today?
Yeah, another great question. So I really honestly think that what stops us from iterating education is simply the fact that it would take and will take a complete overhaul. So, you know, we've come up with this system that quantifies learning based upon tests, and then those test scores approve the funding that each school receives, and then overall approves the funding for every county and then every state and kind of beyond there. So you're talking about a much larger system than just the educational piece. you're talking about how the government gives, you know, education money. And so I think we would have to, and are kind of taking that entire system and rebooting it and saying education cannot start with what children need to learn based upon what the Department of Education decides. Education has to start with the child. It has to be flipped upon its head, because right now, if you think about it, the country decides what the standards of learning are going to be at, as a whole. Then the state defines what those standards of learning are going to be for that state. And then the county takes the Virginia state standards in my state and then applies that down to the students. And the end person in that entire equation happens to be the student. So we really have to look at flipping that completely and starting with each individual child and saying, who is this child? How do they learn? And how can we serve that child's needs? So I think to go back to the answer to your question, Brittany, is like, it's a much larger issue than just the content and the approach and the method in which we educate children. It comes down to, as most things do in this country, unfortunately, how money is divided up. And so it's really, you have to go in and explode that entire system. And what the funny thing is, you know, from the people that I've worked with in my career, like, education would be fundamentally cheaper if we went about it in a child-centered, you know, child-centric education.
So with the, when you speak on the child-centric education, what kind of models would you be using to help children adapt to this new structure? And what kind of, material, and what are you educating them on? I understand, like, the kid comes first, but what are you teaching them if there's no, you know, overhaul or over all encompassing
like curriculum? Yeah.
Yes.
I see what you're saying. So, you know, I am a Montessori educator. I grew up in the Montessori field as a teacher, and then I ended up training other teachers and then went to running large Montessori schools in the area and then founded my own. And, you know, I'm not totally convinced about the Montessori model. I love it. But to answer your question, it's kind of a combination of all of these different methods, right? Like Montessori and Reggio Emilia and Waldorf and constructivist theories, like all of these different things basically are child-centered, meaning that the focus is around instilling self-confidence, independence, order within the child first, rather than you need to know your 1 through 10, 10 through 20s, quantities, multiplication, geometry, like all of the different content learned. So what I did for a long time prior to starting as executive director of Common Ground is I founded my own school. And in that time, we partnered with a ed tech company out in San Francisco called Alt School, which was started by the former director of personalization for Google. And his idea was basically all of our idea, which is how can we leverage technology? And this is kind of answering your question, Shannon, of like if we can build a platform in the cloud, on the worldwide intraweb nets, that basically collects all of the best practices of all of these different approaches. And then we're able to then work in this platform to enter the data in of how these students are learning, what they're doing in their classrooms, what they're doing for each subject area. Then, you know, what's called machine learning, which is basically using algorithms to do brain thinking quicker than humans can do, is taking that data together and applying these different approaches to meet the needs of the child. So each child, if we did it right, we would have a platform of education that had the best practices of all of these different progressive looks that then we could upload data into it, whether it be teacher observation, whether it be pictures, videos of the children's learning, videos and recordings of the teacher's lessons, things like that. Analyze it, see what kids work best together, see how kids learn. All of a sudden, education becomes way more personal and way more successful, because you're grouping children with other children that vibe in the same thing. And dependent on, like, let's say what projects you're doing in the classroom, potentially if you needed to solve a larger problem, you know, we could group children together that fit all of the needs that that problem requires. So if there's a problem that, you know, a child needs to engage other children to learn information, you probably want to, you know, send a child that has a little bit more of an EQ than an IQ into that scenario to thrive. It's because what we do in education right now is we tell kids what they're not good at. When we look at report cards, the A's are great, but the F's stand out far more. Your parents look at those F's and say, oh, we've got a lot of work to do, not the A's. And, you know, and one of the biggest things that I look at is like, when you look at like a report card, a lot of the times art and music aren't even on there. But if they are, these children thrive in these areas, but then their parents are so focused on, well, why did you get a C in history? Well, not everybody loves history, and we're not expected to. And we focus so much of our time and attention as parents and as educators on what children aren't good at. When the reality is, and you know, I know Shannon, you know, being an entrepreneur yourself, you can understand that like you went in on your strengths. You went all in on your strengths, not your weaknesses. You didn't go start a bakery, not saying that you can't bake, but you know,
never had my scones, Garrett.
But you know what I mean? Like Brittany, you're like, you love teaching yoga. I heard the Love Letter to Yoga podcast. Like, you wouldn't go and be a, you know, a brain surgeon because that's not your strength, right? Like, your strength is connecting with people. So you're going to go all in on that. Yet that's why our school system in an entirety fails. So I really think, to kind of go back to what kind of platforms and things that we need to build, whatever it may be, whether it be web-based, whether it be human-based, it doesn't matter. We need to pull together all of these approaches and say that, yeah, this approach really meets this child's need, but this approach really meets this child's need. So like, that's a lot of the work we're doing at Common Ground right now is plugging our teachers into trainings and environments to learn, like sending my teachers to Reggio Emilia schools and Montessori schools and Waldorf schools just to learn, and then bring all of that wealth of information back so that a child that really needs a Waldorf approach, we can speak to that and we can deliver upon that and allow that child to be successful. And for me, success is a child that understands that there's never an end to learning. We should always be learning. We should always be open to being being taught. We should always be open in moments. You know, we talk about mindfulness a lot in schools, but always being able to be aware of the space that we're in and how we can learn from others in that space. Because I think what we do now is we craft an education to where kids really feel like when they're done with college, like, hey, I'm done. Like, it's on to go applying that learning. But at the end of the day, we should always be open to saying, like, none of us have it figured out. You know, I learned so much. I speak specifically to a moment. It's so funny because Shannon and I were sitting down. I can't remember if we were in the car or something like that last time you visited. And you had like a super good idea about, you know, something I should do with my business, right? And I can't even remember what the idea was, but I was like, that is a fantastic idea and something that I would have never thought of. And the only way that I would have learned from, like, in that moment is to be open to understanding that I don't even have my own business figured out, that I can always learn from somebody else. And these are things like we learn as adults, but we don't as children because we're put into a system that doesn't teach us that. It teaches us memorize, 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 regurgitate, move on. See what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of shame that goes along when you're going back to report cards and you're identifying what you're doing wrong. Well, then right then you feel like shame involved with that. So I feel like it goes back to just a lot of those fundamentals of feeling not lifted up, not confidence building, and then just the constant pushing down of you're not good at that. You stay here. This is your lane, instead of exploring maybe they could be good at that lane just in a different teaching way. You
That's
know?
Exactly right. Absolutely. And really looking at kids and saying, like, you know, kids get, you know, cocky and prideful around, you know, being considered smart in school. But let's unpack that, that they're considered smart in school because they're good at taking tests. That's a skill. That's it. Like, taking a test is a skill. And if you learn how to take a test, you can be very successful in school. If kids in this system, in this school system, if kids took a 6-week class on how to take and pass tests, like, every kid would be successful because it's a formula. You're not like, and a lot of the times you're not retaining the knowledge that you're being taught. you're simply just being given content to memorize to then give back. And the shame lies around not being good at that. It's not, it doesn't have anything to do with somebody's smarts. Some of the smartest people in the that I've ever met don't have college degrees. You look at the people that literally run our country right now, the Mark Zuckerbergs, the Sergey and whatever the guy's name is that started Google, you know, Jeff Bezos. Like, these guys didn't graduate college. They didn't. And that's pretty amazing to think about. And these are really intelligent people. Yet in our school system, and we look up to those guys as almost gods now, but then we look at our school system and say, like, you have to have X, Y, and Z in order to be considered, like, killing it at school. I just think it's ridiculous.
Yeah. No, I agree. There was, I can't remember what grade it was in, but I remember I had a teacher who, we had a test on a Friday and, you know, we took it and that was the grade that we got. And then on Tuesday, he gave us the same test. He's like, look, you're not getting graded on this. I'm just curious how many of you could get the same grade again and take this test. And it was amazing. Like, the entire class had lower grades the second time he took it. And the whole point was, he's like, most of the time when you take a test, you take it to remember what you've been asked to do. And then that information just leaves your brain. You don't ask it to, it just goes away on its own. And I will always remember that. And like, man, I didn't mean to lose this information, but it's gone. You know, like, I was like, shoot, I feel like, you know, 4 or 5 days, I shouldn't have forgotten that much about it. But it was no longer important for me to put down on a piece of paper. So it was just, I mean, it was gone.
I mean, and that happens exponentially in our country. And, you know, you think about our country in the 1950s, even was number one in preparation for education, was number one in overall test scores in history and math and, you know, all the subject curriculum areas. Well, you look at our country now as technology and everything, like, we're number one in zero things. If you want to quantify based upon like the testing, our national scores, all of that, like, the best I think we are is 36th in, you know, I think that's even English. And hi, we're an English speaking country. Like, our school system. Yeah, exactly. Like, you look at you look at that and it's sad. And you have to think about like, how far does it have to go? And that's a question I ask myself a lot lately, and especially in our current political climate. It's like, well, how far does it have to go in order for people to say like, enough's enough? And
I think
one of the things
at that point.
What'd you say?
I said, I think we're hitting that breaking point soon. I feel like it's coming to a head, given certain things that have happened in media.
I mean, and again, I don't like to get super political, but our education system put a guy like Trump out there. You have to think about our education system is crafted around quantifying in a very closed-minded way. So of course you're going to put closed-minded people into the world. And I think we really need to take a hard look at, and, you know, it's funny because as the whole, you know, when Trump was elected and put into office and then they hired Betsy DeVos as Secretary of Education, I looked at that and said, you know, people can be mad. Like, of course, you know, she comes from the private school industry. But one of the things that she really did that I thought was actually a smart thing was like opening up education to provide funding for charter schools, because charter schools put different approaches into the public sector and does exactly what my foundation does, which is to take children that are less fortunate in a lot of cases in extreme poverty. And in most cases in that, only doing things like eating at school, you're helping to bridge the gap by providing a forward thinking education. And so when everybody was like complaining, I'm like, no, look at this. This could be the shot to say like, how can we deploy more progressive approaches into our public school systems? And that sounded like a good way. Now, of course, that didn't work out due to, you know, the institution that is the Department of Education and the fact that funding would have been pulled from certain programming in the short term for longer term results. But, you know, I look at basically every problem, in my opinion, that we suffer in our country right now from can be solved with education. Because even things like racism, things like bigotry, are all spawned from lack of exposure and ignorance. So if we can educate and expose kids to things like cultural diversity and socioeconomical diversity, then all of a sudden we're showing them that, you know, people are people, you know, whether you're white, black, poor, gray, Asian, whatever it may be, like people are people. We're all humans at the core. And so, you know, I think that if we can really take a deep dive into, you know, giving kids a whole child education that's not just academic focus, we can really solve a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. I do have, like, do you have a couple of tips you can share to give parents, to help parents encourage learning in their kids? So if they're, you know, if they're in the public school system or even like a private school system, like, do you have some tips that you've seen that you can encourage parents to help, you know, learning in their children?
Things they can apply at home.
Yeah. So I think one of the biggest problems with, you know, education in the home is centered around the fact that, you know, we are, and you guys have even done a little dive into this in on your show, we're embedded in a very kind of short-term society. So you watch TV and everything's like instant and, you know, blips and blurps, and our attention is focused in on short-term stuff. You're looking on your phone, you're watching fast shows. Our kids watch these shows that would give me a seizure, you know, like. And the biggest problem with that is that we're ruining what's called the executive functioning portion of our brain, which is the frontal cortex. It's the frontal lobe that does things like establish your personality, manage your workload, planning, organization, and in life and in work. Like, and we're basically ripping that apart. And so my point is that what you can do at home should all center around routine, and a routine that's manageable with reasonable expectations for your child, so that when your child comes home, when they start coming home with homework, that you have dedicated time, technology free, that you are there as the parent, whether it be mom or dad or both, engaging with your child in their own education. Because the one thing that you don't want to do is be totally separate from that and not be involved, because then your kids can get a one up on you at any time. And your kids can really fall through the cracks, especially now, because the way that we are engaging in content and media and the requirements of our education system are not matching up. And so we're setting kids up for failure. So I think one big tip is establish a routine that is daily, that is Monday through Friday, where you're dedicating 30 minutes, an hour and a half, to working with your child, making it an active thing, not a passive thing for parents. Because what parents tend to do, have your child working next to you doing homework while they're on their cell phones doing work. I'm guilty of it too. My laptop's open. I'm answering emails when I should be really focused on the content in which my children are required to learn. Because again, an engaged family around education sets kids up for success. It really does.
Can you offer some advice on language, like positive language that we can use when talking to our children about learning, their strengths, their creativeness, anything that can promote that within the home as well?
Yeah. So like, I think we are all guilty of saying good job, and good job sounds wonderful. And you feel good as a parent telling your child good job. But over and over and over again, the more you say, I'm so proud of you, good job, the more you're encouraging your child to be successful based upon how you feel as a parent. When the language should be, I see the work that you've done. You should be so proud of yourself. Well, what do you think of this, Mom? Well, it doesn't really matter what I think about it. What do you think about it? How do you feel about this art project? How do you feel that you did in this work? All of a sudden, the dialogue starts shifting and the focus goes back on the child. And again, when it comes back to things like mindfulness, being aware of who you are and how you're thinking. One of the things that I'm really passionate on that I've worked a lot on in my career is establishing, instead of teaching kids what to learn, teaching them how to learn, almost metacognition. So walking them through a cycle of learning that you call out. you say, oh my goodness, like in most learning moments, you're the first step is instilling a sense of wonder in the new concept. So you're in the wonder phase of what you're learning. Now we investigate what we're doing, and now you're in the investigation phase. So you're giving them the language of understanding how they're thinking. So if you know in yoga, like the ultimate goal in my mind, being someone that practices yoga, is to be able to almost, if this makes sense, jump back out of yourself and look at yourself and be like, you know, in some situations you're like, why am I being such an ass right now? And then jumping back in your body and going, oh yeah, you know, like based upon you actually looking for at yourself from above, or looking at your feelings and your thoughts and emotion from an external place. I almost think about it as like 2 or 3 feet behind your brain, looking, you know, at yourself thinking. The more we can give kids that ability, the better. The more understanding of who they are and why they should be working intrinsically for themselves, the more we set kids up for success, because they're not working for us. They're not working for a teacher's approval. They're working for their own selves. And if you've ever truly found the love in your life, whether that be romantic or whether that be career focused, it's because you found it. It's because you own it, right? I'm sure, Brittany, when you teach a yoga class, that you love it because it's something you found yourself. It's like religion. Religion is only truly powerful when you discover and choose it yourself. Most people that have religion forced upon them explode because that's not something that they've intrinsically adopted into their lives. And so the language that we should be using at home should all be centered around putting the, you know, whether it be a child's bad behavior, whether it be a child's really great job that they did on their work, it should always be, you know, oh, I see that you're angry. You're showing me that you're angry because your shoulders are raised, your face looks, there's a scowl on your face. Take a look in the mirror. Look what you look like, right? Those are the things that are going to have children be aware of their emotions and feelings and start to regulate them, for the same reason in their education. When you take a look at a project, saying good job sounds good on paper for you and gives you that kind of dopamine fix. But for the child, it's just another reiteration of you need to work for me, my happiness, not your own, my happiness. Does that make sense?
It brings a lot of truth within myself. And I've always thought that I'm so proud of you is so narcissistic.
Yeah.
And but I never knew like what to say instead of that or in lieu of that. And I just always struggle. I'm like, I don't say that a whole lot because I'm like, well, it's not about me. I you know, your accolades, you swimming really fast in that swim meet is not about me. It's about you. But I never knew what to say. I was like, I'm proud of you, but I'm happy you swam fast. I don't know.
I know. I mean, but truly as a parent, I am proud of my kid. Like I want them to know that I am proud, but I don't want them to think that that's, you know, the end all be all of why they're doing, you know, that activity.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Which and I think there's a balance there, right? There's like, there is a sense of you want them to know that you as their parent are proud. But you also don't want them to be reliant upon that pride, upon that, because again, that's not setting a child up for success. It's really giving them a crutch. You know, it's saying like, I should go to the swim meet and I should swim my ass off because my mom wants me to. Well, we all know that like at the end of the day, mom's not always going to be there. So then what are you going to do? Are you going to still work as hard as you need to work, or are you going to wait for mom's approval? And that's what we're seeing, guys, in the millennial culture. You know, everybody hates on millennials. I think there's so many strengths that millennials bring to the workforce specifically. But the one thing that I have noticed kind of overall is this, like, you know, I've had people that interview for a job with my foundation where their mom calls in to schedule the interview. And these are like 25-year-old people. And I'm like, what the hell are you doing? Have them call. You know what I mean?
You're like, oh, wow. Okay, well, I wasn't expecting to hire you, Susie's mom. So,
which you're used to being called, because that's what you were called when my son was 5 years old. I mean, everybody, I'm sure you're, you know, everybody calls you, you know, so-and-so's mom and dad.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we've really, this is super informative. I think that you're doing amazing work. I think that it is one of those things that it's going to take pressing us outside our comfort zone to really take on what you're doing. So we really applaud you.
Yes. And we would love to have you back in the next couple of weeks, Garrett, if you'd be willing to come back on, because we certainly have a lot more questions. I think you've given us a lot to think about, and this could be like a 9-part series. So
totally. And again, like, you know, I'm a huge fan of the show. You know, obviously, there's a deeper connection here beyond just the show. But I think, you know, as a friend, I listen all the time and I love what you guys are doing. I think just providing value to your listeners and in a relatable sense is huge. And so anything that I can do to kind of educate your listeners on a different perspective, I'm not trying to convince anybody anything. I'm just trying to say, this is what I'm doing based upon what I've learned in my career. And I think the other thing I did want to mention is, you know, I would definitely want you guys to, if you could, at some point, I have a podcast myself. It's called What's Best for Kids. And the whole idea around the podcast is simply starting a dialogue around literally what's best for kids. I'm not saying I know what's best for kids. I'm saying that I've been working in this career, this in education with children for 20 years plus, and can provide some insight. But I think, you know, I would love to continue the conversation around this. Of course, it's what I've dedicated my entire life to. So thank you guys so much for giving me the platform and avenue to talk to your listeners about what I think is important.
Awesome.
Well, I'm sure our listeners have loved hearing all of your knowledge, because we can definitely sense the passion. It's palpable. We can feel it on the other end, even though we're very remote. So yes, we can't wait to have you back soon.
And how can our listeners find you? Find more of you.
So thank you. Yeah. So you can find me at, you know, at What's Best for Kids Show on Facebook, at What's Best for Kids Show on Instagram, at What's Best for Kids Show on all of the things, really. And then they can find the podcast on www.whatsbestforkids.com, and then commongroundchildcare.org. That's the foundation website. And you can see what we're doing and what we've been up to and the impact that we make in our community.
That's awesome. Well, Garrett, thank you so much. And we will be in touch very soon to have you on again.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
Thanks for sharing your time with us. Help keep the CZL momentum going by rating our podcast and writing a review.
If you love what you heard in today's episode, snap a screenshot and post it to your Instagram stories.
Don't forget to tag us.